Blog Talk Radio.
I think there's this very strange mindset that we have that we don't really need to like start worrying about those financial things until we're married. To me, that's just kind of like bad thinking because you don't know when or if you'll ever get married. I'm 38 and I've never been married. So if I would have waited this long, I would have been in even worse shape. But also, if you do decide to get married at some point, what an awesome thing to bring into a marriage that you have this financial muscle that you've built.
Welcome and thanks for tuning in to the Midday Money Show, your weekly shot of uncommon financial good sense. I'm your host, Tony Husbands, a financial coach with the Debt-Free Divas, and today's topic, Jessica Garbarino's single-minded determination to dump $56,000 of debt, is all about sharing her story of being a single woman who came to the realization that she could be doing more with the money that she had. And it reminds us, folks, number one, spend more time with your grandparents if you still have them. Learn from them. Appreciate their struggle. Learn from their experience so that you can stand on their shoulders and take advantage of all this country has to offer you. And two, just because your shot out of debt doesn't flow like a straight arrow or doesn't look like someone else's experience doesn't mean that you will not eventually accomplish your financial goals. If you don't take anything away from this episode, I want you to remember the word persevere. Life does not give you a pass on challenges just because you decide to get out of debt. So regardless of what life throws at you, what kind of twists and turns you have to make, starts and stops, as long as you don't give up, you will eventually accomplish your financial goals. I had a great time talking with Jessica, and I know you're going to enjoy this and derive a lot of inspiration from it. So sit back, enjoy, and let's get into today's episode. So, Jessica, you have recently, actually, not too long ago, had a great experience with becoming debt-free. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I became debt-free in March of 2015, so it's only been a little over 18 months that I've been completely debt-free. But that journey started 6 years ago.
How much did you pay off total?
I paid off $56,000 of debt.
Oh, wow. Good for you, girl. Good for you. Out of your life. Okay, so take us back to the beginning.
So the journey begins back in January of 2010, and most people think, oh, okay, so it was like a New Year's resolution thing you got into, and it really wasn't because it was actually a few weeks later when people's New Year's resolutions have
faded.
Been far forgotten already, and you're back eating the way you were, and
right.
The gym membership is laying there not being used.
Right.
But I was visiting my grandparents down here in South Florida. I was not living here at the time. And my grandparents were having my grandfather's having some knee surgery, so I was down here helping my grandparents. And I was watching my grandmother, my abuela,
mm-hmm.
they're from Cuba,
mm-hmm.
and I was watching her balance her checkbook. And my grandmother probably should have been an accountant at some point in her life because she was so meticulous about her checkbook. Like, if she was off by a penny,
mm-hmm.
she would freak out. It would, like, wig her out the entire day until she figured out where that penny was off.
Okay.
I mean, she was meticulous. So I'm watching her balance her checkbook, and I'm thinking about all of the money stories and just the struggle that they had coming to the United States in their late 30s. They left Cuba in 1962. When a lot of Cubans were leaving, obviously, when Castro came.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember hearing the stories about how they started over from zero in their late 30s and had to start all over again. They couldn't bring anything with them. I found out later they couldn't even bring their wedding rings. I mean, you had to leave everything behind.
Really? Oh, interesting.
It was considered contraband, you know. It was considered a property of the state. So
really?
they had to leave it. Yep. Anything valuable, they had to leave. So, you know, listening to their struggle and having to start over in a country, I mean, they couldn't even do the jobs that they had done in Cuba. My grandmother was a school teacher. She didn't know English. How could she teach? And they couldn't bring any of their credentials with them.
Mm.
So she, just listening to those stories and thinking about hearing about the time that they paid off $55,000 off on their mortgage. I mean, it just, like, I was watching her and thinking of all this. And, I'd been kind of having this feeling inside of me of, like, I just don't feel like I'm getting ahead. And, like, watching her, like, in that instant, I was like, okay, I have to do something different because these people did not sacrifice this much for me to completely blow it.
Wow.
You know, and just throw it all away. I mean, there are people who would love to come to this country to have the opportunities we have.
Right.
And I just felt like I was throwing it away. And so that was kind of my light bulb moment to make that change.
At that point, you had the $56,000 in debt?
Well, and I didn't figure that out till I went home and actually added it all up, which is scary.
That can be kind of traumatic. It really can. So at that point, what did that $56,000 represent?
The $56,000 was $29,000 in MBA student loans.
Okay.
I had $14,000 in credit card,
mm-hmm.
and I had $13,000 on a car.
Okay.
And
okay.
So, you know you have debt, but I don't think people realize how much debt they really have until they add it up because it's kind of, it's been normalized,
right?
Like student loans, car, credit card. It wasn't like I was doing like crazy stuff.
Right. Right.
This is all pretty typical American debt.
Right.
And but when I added up.
And at this point,
yeah.
You're making the payments. So it wasn't like you had
Because all you're seeing the payments.
Right.
All you're seeing is how much you're paying every month. Okay, that's how much I'm paying. And you're
right.
paying minimum payments on it. And but to see like physically how much, you know, in like on in writing how much it was that like that moment just kind of took my breath away a little bit.
So at this point, were you, you said you felt like you weren't getting ahead, but were you struggling financially or was it just kind of a sense like I should be doing more?
I felt like I should be doing better because I had a really good paying job and I just felt like I never had enough money to do the things that I really wanted to because at this point, a lot of my credit cards had gotten to the point where I really couldn't use them that much anymore because some of them had been close to maxed out and I didn't want to take on yet another credit card. And I just, you could see that part of it building.
Mm-hmm.
The student loan just felt like, and I know that that's nothing close to what people have as far as student loans, but to me, that felt like a huge weight.
Right. To you, it's your situation, right? And it's something that
mm-hmm.
you are shouldering, right? I totally understand. Because,
right.
yeah, I came out with $13,000 in student loan debt, and I thought that was massive, you know, and it's still,
right.
you know, comparatively, maybe somebody else would say, but even to this day, and it's been 20 years
mm-hmm.
since, you know, since I graduated from college, but has it been 20 years? My gosh. But yeah, it's been 16
for me for my undergrad, yeah, so I know.
Right. So, yeah, I felt like, oh my God. It's going to take me 10 whole years. You know, I'm looking, again, this is my experience at the time, but $13,000, what did I do with this money? But yeah, I totally understand. It's your situation and how that impacts you. You can't really compare yourself to other people.
Yeah, I mean, it felt very weighted.
Yeah.
Like I felt very weighted by all. And I think looking at the numbers, I think getting to actually finding out the number first is the biggest hurdle for anyone because that's reality.
Right.
That's what you're working with now. It's not like, oh, these are, you know, possible numbers. No, this is really what it is.
Right.
And that's what you got to deal with. So
great
I think that's
point.
That's the biggest first step for anyone trying to get out of debt.
Find out where you stand right now. So at this point, how old were you?
Oh, my gosh. How old was I? I was 32.
And you said something before. So we've had a chance. I know a little bit about your story because we had a chance to kiki and haha a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
So I knew you're going to be like a great guest. But you said that you woke up in your 30s with a financial hangover.
So I was in my 20s during the height of Sex and the City, the whole big show and it was like I was living in Philadelphia in my mid-20s. I was in an apartment downtown and like Cosmos were the big drink and
mm-hmm.
I had more shoes. I mean, when someone helped me move, they were like, is this it for the shoes? Like, really? Like, are we done now? Because this is crazy. I had bins of shoes.
Uh-huh.
So I was just on this like friends, and that was during the 2000s, you know, when
yeah.
everyone was like, go, 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 and
oh, yeah.
mortgage companies were handing out the mortgages like they were, you know, candy.
They were making it rain.
And I know, it really was. And so in my 30s, I think a lot of people have this happen where they kind of wake up in their 30s and they're like, whoa, I'm not 22 anymore, like fresh out of college, like
mm-hmm.
this is like adult now,
mm-hmm.
like you're a real... I almost felt like I was more of a real adult in my 30s finally,
exactly.
than in my 20s.
Right.
Like I had to have some sort of responsibility. And so I call it my financial hangover because that's the reality that I had to deal with after the actions of my 20s.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that's when I think that's when the weight of it finally hit me.
Gotcha. This episode is sponsored by Personal Capital, a free online tool that helps you keep track of your personal finances, folks. Track your spending, manage your investments, and keep up with everything through their secure mobile app. You can support the Midday Money Show and take advantage of this fabulous free tool by creating a free account with Personal Capital. Head over to debtfreedivas.org/personal, and we'll show you the way. So it hits you, you wake up, you're a little groggy, a little heavy to deal with, but you're dealing with it. So what do you do first?
So I was just like on fire about dealing with it. And it was funny because at the exact same time, my best friend, Angie, and her husband were taking Financial Peace University, the Dave Ramsey course, at their church.
Okay.
So she told me about it and she was excited about it. And I love my friend Angie, but she will be the first to tell you that she is not someone who's into finances or thinks it's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to tell me she was enjoying this class was like, whoa, okay, this could be a really great thing. And there wasn't a class starting for a couple of weeks, so I actually, because I'm someone who just takes action, I went out and bought his book,
okay,
Total Money Makeover, first, and kind of got a little bit ahead. I got a head start on it because I was just like, I read it in 2 days and I was hooked.
Oh my
God. I was like, this is what I got to do.
Like kindred spirit. Same exact experience. Like my mother got the book at a conference and we're both readers. And
mm-hmm.
so she got the book. I just happened to be visiting with her, just hanging out with her. And she got it. And I was like, oh, let me take this home. She's like, nope. If you want to read it, you got to read it now. So yeah, 2 days I had to read the book. And give it back, and yeah, the rest is history. So go ahead.
It was great. No, I mean, I was reading it and I got so excited and I started paying off the debt, and then I joined Financial Peace University, and on the second night I actually cut up all of my credit cards. I cut the like line in the sand, and I was like, for me, like credit cards, what I call them are like financial heroin for me, because I get like, it's just too easy for me to spend with them. And so I thought I have to like cut the bleeding off now. And so I actually have a picture of all of my credit cards that I had cut up, and I have that kind of as a reminder of where I used to be. But that's when I decided I was really going to be like super serious, like really gung-ho. And so that year it was just, I was like, go, go, go. Like I got a lot of the credit card debt paid off. So by the end of that first year, I had paid like $26,000 off of the 56. Like
yeah.
I was on fire.
Uh-huh.
And I really hadn't gotten started till like about February or March. So I was like, wow, I could be totally done with this by next year.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could be totally debt free.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course life happens. And I like to say that I could have been one of those success stories that was done in like 18 months or 24 months, but I like to say that I'm the story of the person who persevered on in spite of other things that have happened.
Amen.
In my life.
Right. Amen.
So in 2011, those same grandparents that inspired me the year before started having health issues. My grandfather had to have a total knee replacement on one of his knees. My grandmother started having panic attacks as a result of his surgery because she started freaking out about things. And so my mom and my aunt and I were round robining coming down here. And then finally I said, you know what, I'm going to move in with them at least for 6 months till we can get all this squared away and have home health care and get that all figured out at some point.
Okay.
So I moved down. I was able to work as a contractor, converted over to a contractor with my old company. And so I was working from down here in Florida, and then the hours started drying up.
Oh.
And basically there was nothing left for me to do with my old company after only a few months, and I was out of work. And unfortunately, this is 2011, and the South Florida job market had still not healed from the recession because they got hit really hard during the recession.
Right.
So I was scrambling. I couldn't find anything here as far as a job, and I was stressed out. I still had my home in Minnesota, and eventually I had to start making decisions on, do I pay my car payment or do I pay the mortgage on a home that I'm not currently living in? And so I had to decide to pay the car payment so that I could get to the job interview, so I could get the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to start like weighing some of these decisions. And long story short, I mean, by Thanksgiving, I went home for Thanksgiving and I moved all my stuff out of my home and put it into storage. I had finally gotten a job late in 2011, but by that point, you're so far behind with back payments and legal fees that they tack on and late charges that there was no way I was going to be able to pay it off. And so I let it go. And in March of 2012, it was sold in the sheriff's sale for 70% below what I had paid for it. So there was just no way I was going to be able to,
I saw a recent video, and I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm gonna post a link to this in the show notes. It's just really important, I think, for people to share and be honest about the highs and lows of this experience, because you had some paperwork. You're recently moving again. You're a mover.
Mover and a shaker.
Right, mover and a shaker and a debt slayer. So you were recently moving again, and you found paperwork from that experience.
Yes, it was wild.
Talk about that video.
So I posted out on Instagram, and then I created a video where I talked about it, where I had found in my files, because I'm trying to declutter at the same time moving, because you're trying to get rid of stuff. And I find the legal notices that I got from my foreclosure, which were just like, oh, like it was the notice telling me when the sheriff's sale was going to be, and it just brought back a whole bunch of memories. And then, but at the same time, kind of the redeeming part of this story was that I found where I had paid off my Capital One credit card.
I had the payoff
statement, or the one where I paid off my car and I was applying for the title for my car.
Right.
And it was just like this, like a wave of different emotions. Because at one point I'm like really sad about the foreclosure part of it, but then on the same side I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Look at the success that I had. So
right.
It was like reliving it all over again. Crazy.
Life doesn't give us a pass on challenges when we decide we are going to get out of debt.
I feel like it's telling me like, oh, so you want to get out of debt? Prove to me how much you really want to get out of debt, because
exactly.
You're going to make it as tough as possible for you.
You really don't. It's like you don't get a pass on life's challenges, unfortunately. And you mentioned it earlier that you are the story, and this is what I think people need to hear, that if you persevere, as long as you don't give up, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And it may take you some starts and stops and fits and sputters, but the key here, and I love this in your story, is that, you know what, you had to make a pivot when your grandparents, and that's awesome, first of all, let me just say, when your grandparents' health started to become a challenge, that you took your Sex and City life and you moved it from Philadelphia to
retirement.
That in and of itself is a challenge, I'm sure. But then, you know, then the job situation changed on you. You have a house in another state that you're trying to manage. And there's just a lot going on. And through all this, you still have an eye on, I need to be debt free. And so it wasn't like you just went from, I decided in January of this year that I'm going to do it, and then, you know, 18 months later, it happens, even though you were making some great progress in the beginning. So Let me ask you this. How do you kind of take a look at all of these things? I'm sure it's weighing on you. You're, you know, looking at, okay, what have I done? Maybe some choices I've made weren't so great. Maybe I have some regrets. Who knows? What helps you take all of these lumps, basically, but still keep pushing towards your goal?
Well, I will be completely honest and tell you that even after I got that job in late 2011 and had the foreclosure behind me in early 2012, I kind of went through a period where I'm like, okay, I'm okay being status quo for right now. So I'm just going to pay minimums, because I think between caretaking and dealing with the foreclosure and everything else, I was emotionally spent. I was done. Like, I just didn't have anything else to give. So while I didn't go into more debt, I just continued to kind of be at minimum. And every so often I'd get a little inspired. I'm like, okay, I'm going to throw a little bit more money. And then I realized after a while that I really wasn't helping myself by just kind of not being as aggressive as I was before. And I had a friend of mine online who, in this community that I'm in, he posted a challenge and he said, what do you want to complete in the next 5 years? Like, what are your goals? Like, what do you hope to accomplish? And I thought about it and I'm like, well, yeah, I want to get out of debt. I want to be finally done with this. And so I actually posted it online in 2014 and said this was my number one goal to be done with. And that's when I really cranked it back into gear. And what I realized through that process for me is that I needed to have continual support and encouragement online. Well, I found it online because I found like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed to have that. And that's why I eventually decided to create the business that I created, because I wanted to be that in the financial space, or out in, you know, in Facebook or whatever social media, or even just online, to be that presence for someone else who mm-hmm. feels like there's no hope.
And that's key. We are just clicking on all cylinders, girl, because it is just in terms of like the accountability to let you know that you are not alone. You're not going through this by yourself. You're not the only one that is dealing with the issues that you are dealing with, or has dealt with the issues that you are dealing with. And so, that's one of the reasons too I wanted to have you on, because a major key component of the audience that listens to my show are women and single women. And so let's talk about that, because that is kind of the focus of your site, Every Single Dollar, and that's the focus of your business, is creating this community for women, for single women in particular, correct?
Yes, because I wanted to create something that wasn't there for me when I was going through my debt-free journey.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is? Why do you think that type of support system was so non-existent at that point?
You know, I don't know why someone hasn't created it, honestly, because there's a lot of single women out there.
Uh-huh.
But I just don't feel like they can raise their hand. You know, I know, right? They're off doing other stuff. They're like, whatever. I think there's this weird perception, too, and I wrote something about this, too, that I think there's this very strange mindset that we have, that we don't really need to, like, start worrying about kind of that adult stuff or those financial things until we're married. I don't know. I always kind of had that in my mind, like, well, I could be getting married in 4 or 5 years. I don't know. So why do I really need to start going down a financial path when it could change in 4 or 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's just kind of like bad thinking, because first of all, you don't know when or if you'll ever get married. I'm 38 and I've never been married. So if I would have waited this long, I would have been in even worse shape.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think too that if you do decide to get married at some point, what an awesome thing to bring into a marriage, that you have this financial knowledge and this, you know, financial muscle that you've built.
Amen.
And so I wanted to tell women, hey, it is okay, and you definitely should be looking at your finances and take charge of this so you can start creating that future that you want for yourself.
I would have to say I definitely relate to that, because, yeah, I don't know that I was that very serious about life. I was like, you know, footloose, fancy free.
Right.
You know,
again, all about going out on the weekends.
Right.
It's just like,
right,
we get out of work and have fun and go on trips. And you're just not thinking like about the future. I think sometimes when you get married and have kids, you think a lot more about that, because you now have people you're responsible for.
Exactly.
And I think when you're by yourself, you're just kind of like, whatever, like it'll happen at some point. And then, you know, maybe if I get married, then we'll start getting serious about what financially I need to do. And I don't think it's something that you think about and say out loud. I think it's just something that we just do subconsciously.
That definitely makes sense. Do you think that going in to take care of your grandparents had anything to do with this kind of revelation for you?
Well, I think just spending enough time with them, and then, you know, again, being reminded of what they went through and having to start over. Like, they were almost 40, you know, they were in their late 30s. They were almost 40 having to start over. So it's also that hope of like, well, just because you're 40 doesn't mean you're destitute and like you can't make any change in your life either financially, because
right.
I've seen it happen.
Right.
They retired and they did fine, and they lived the American dream. So I don't think I think it was, like I said, it was great to be able to watch them and realize what they had done and kind of piece it together. And I think it kind of came to me at the right point in my life that I needed.
Right. We have just a little bit more time. So I'd like to circle back to the focus for single women. And so if we have some single women that are listening to this show and that may have made a decision, maybe they're coming out of their financial hangover right now, you know, they're putting that credit card drink down and they're kind of in that throes of, I really want to do something different, I want to change, and I don't know where to start. start, I guess, or I need a little bit of motivation. Can you kind of speak to them, and what are some things that you think single women in particular should do right now to get started?
I think the biggest thing is to think about what are some of your goals. Like, what are some of the things you want to accomplish? What are some of the things you want to experience? What are your dreams? Because I think when you start dreaming, that's when you start having the idea of possibility. And I think that can be a great motivational factor to helping you get out of debt and to kind of, you know, making sure that your finances are organized. Because, you know, in order to reach a financial goal or a financial or a dream that usually involves finances, we have to have our financial house in order. So I think if you can start brainstorming as to what kinds of things you want to do or accomplish, I think that helps kind of get that motivation started. And then I think the second thing really is, okay, then let's assess where we are right now. And that's where it requires pulling out financial statements and looking at, what do I owe on my credit cards? What do I owe on my student loans? I mean, that's the first thing I ask my clients to do is pull out all of your statements and tell me what the balance is, not what the minimum payment is. And I think if you can get a total financial picture of where you are, where you want to get to, that's when you can start creating that roadmap into helping you achieve those goals and dreams.
Well, Jessica, this has been super informative, and I really appreciate you sharing your story, giving us a little history. I'm also a closet history buff, so I was really taking that in.
That's great.
I watch the History Channel on repeat, you know. So
yeah, I'm like a museum junkie.
Me
so.
Too. I'm telling you, we're kindred spirits. Before we end today, can you just let everybody know where you hang out online, and if they want to contact you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Definitely. So you can visit my website, everysingledollar.com. I also mostly hang out on Facebook at my page, Every Single Dollar. I also have a Facebook community called the Every Single Dollar Community. And I'm also on Instagram at Jess Garbarino. And if they want to reach me, they can email me at jessica@everysingledollar.com.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Now it's time for the community question portion of our podcast, where I spend a little tea with you, Team Debt Free. So today's question is actually not really a question. It's more of a comment, and I take those two. And it comes from Carlise Marie, and she left a response, which I thought was pretty interesting, to a question on Facebook where I put it out there just asking if you have an accountability partner. That, again, is one of the key ingredients for staying focused on your journey out of debt. An accountability partner or accountability team, as I actually prefer, just helps one another stay motivated. It's kind of like if you've been involved in these Fitbit challenges, need to just work off of the energy from somebody else when you're up. Maybe somebody is down. When you're down, somebody else is up. Just kind of reminding you to stay focused on your goals and also encouraging you when you get a little weak. And also somebody to celebrate your small wins with. That's important. Celebrate those small wins, and that reignites your fire to stay focused. Carlise's comment was she did not have an accountability partner because she has a small circle of friends and acquaintances, and none are committed to the level that she is trying to maintain. So she says she's pretty self-sufficient, which is good. She's a tad bit of a loner, but this financial trip that she's on is part of her 3-year plan, and it is all her. So first of all, let me just say kudos to you, Carlise Marie, for having a plan at all. And a 3-year plan kind of means that you have some idea of what you need to do and the time frame that it's going to take you. That is awesome. So kudos to you for that. If that's your thing, if you're a loner, some people work well like that. But if you're not a loner and you need a little bit of motivation to stay focused and stay committed to this journey, definitely join us on Facebook. Find us there, facebook.com/debtfreeforlife, or reach out to me on my website, debtfreedivas.org. Keep those questions and comments coming. This is awesome. I love connecting, and it's all about, again, building this community that we're part of, because I just want you to be encouraged that you are not going through this process alone. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Midday Money Show and hanging out with me. Remember, all links mentioned in today's episode will be available on our website, debtfreedivas.org. You can also keep in contact on Facebook and Twitter And finally, last but not least, I definitely want to remind you, head over to our website so that you can get signed up for the 6-day Hidden Money Challenge. Going great, getting a lot of good feedback from that, and I want to have you in this with us. So I hope you enjoy the